This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Starting to see the undeveloped world as a door to thinking that can help us in the developed world, because the developed world is encumbered by our belief system of what we really think we need to survive.
What do you get when you combine the contoured and colorful aesthetic of Gaudí with the sensibility of an ecological innovator? You might get my guest today on Sea Change Radio. Michael Reynolds's vocation, Earthship Biotecture, represents something of a revolution in architecture. Using what most architects would consider trash, Reynolds began working in the 1970s to create experimental homes that were designed to be completely energy self-sufficient. Due to the experimental nature of the projects, and the fact that many of the methods he was using in his buildings were untested, Reynolds ended up losing his credentials as an architect. So he renamed what he does. It's not architecture, it's Earthship Biotecture. Now that he has been at it for several decades, Reynolds has perfected methods for solar heating, geothermal cooling, and gray water capture, all using materials with low or even negative environmental impact. He's heralded among many environmentalists as a visionary and joins us today from his New Mexico home. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Michael Reynolds. He's an architect who practices biotecture. Michael, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
So you've had an illustrious career creating homes and structures that meld with the earth before being green and carbon neutral were even common terms. Why don't you take us a little bit back to your evolution as an architect and when you first wanted to mesh your natural surroundings in a profound way that hadn't really been seen before?
Well, I think the whole thing came about from, really, I say it came about from the media. The media was always talking about, from magazines to newspapers to radio to TV news, for the last 45 years, they've been talking about the problems of humanity on this planet. And a couple of the first problems they talked about were, back in the early 70s, were garbage from the soda and beer cans being thrown everywhere. And they talked about clear-cutting timber and that affecting the future environmental aspects of the planet. And those two things put me in a direction of thinking to start using garbage or cans, for instance, as opposed to trees for building with. And then I got into garbage instead of using trees to build with, and got into tires and bottles. And garbage became not garbage. It became a natural resource of this planet, just as trees are. And one thing led to another, and I started capturing energy. And
what year is this?
This is all early 70s, mid 70s. See, we had the first energy crisis when it was early to mid 70s, and that caused us to start trying to get energy from the sun and wind. And then we started having water issues in recent decades, and they say the next world wars will be fought over waters. So that shoved us into trying to harvest water. And then, of course, for many decades, sewage has been dumped into rivers, streams, and oceans, and still is by almost every major city. So that caused us to get into containing and treating sewage on site. Then you bring along food, which is grown for money and full of chemicals. And we started growing our own food on site and in the buildings. And we end up with a building that is doing everything for itself. And that's what we end up calling the Earthship.
And people can check out some of the stunning buildings that you've created at earthship.com. So was the first real epiphany for you the first gas crunch of the early 70s? Is that fair
to
say?
It was even before that. It was when the news started talking about beer cans being thrown all over the streets and highways and national parks. And that was before recycling was a word. And they predicted a serious garbage problem in the future from this society. And it did happen.
You're based in Taos, New Mexico, correct?
Yes.
So this is a place that is not too obvious to have the type of population that even a relatively unpopulated state like New Mexico can sustain in terms of water. Water is the most important life-sustaining force in a place like New Mexico, and it's probably magnified more than other places. Tell us about some of the innovations that you've helped develop and that make you optimistic that we can continue to have population centers in places like New Mexico.
Well, we're learning not only how to harvest water very efficiently, but we are learning how to use, reuse, reuse, and reuse water very efficiently. So those two things give me hope, because we are in a drought state, a dry, arid state for the most part. And we are able to make 7 inches per year of annual precipitation take care of a home. So that gives me hope that if you can do it in this kind of a climate, you can do it anywhere. And all of these things, from water to power to sewage containment to food production, all of them we've been told, you can't do that here. You can't produce enough. You can't deal. There is not enough water to live off of. There's not enough power to run a typical home. Well, we are finding ways to minimize the use. At the same time, we are finding ways to harvest all of these things. And it's basically opening up a whole new world.
Can you give us an overview for our listeners who are not familiar with Earthship and the term biotecture? Can you just give us some bullet points on the sustaining principles of biotecture?
Well, biotecture is a word that we invented. It's obviously taken from architecture and biology, and really physics is in there too. It's a word that we invented because I, as an architect, saw over the last four decades that architecture is not, architecture itself is not really even allowing itself to respond to the needs at hand. And so we wanted to come up with a profession that really had nothing to prove in terms of the professionalism or anything. We wanted to branch out and find a way to sustain people, and we wanted to relate it to architecture. So we came up with this word biotecture. Now, there's one other interesting aspect to that, and that is in New Mexico, they took my architectural license away and wouldn't let me use the word anyway. So I said, okay, to hell with you. I'll invent a new word that is more relative and potent to what we should be doing in these times anyway, and we'll call it biotecture. And it has actually taken off. They're talking about biotecture on many parts of the planet now.
And just to put a footnote on that, your architecture license was reinstated, but tell us why the state of New Mexico revoked it in the first place. It doesn't sound like, even though some of your methods may be radical, the principles make a lot of sense, especially in this day and age of sustainable practices.
I was pushing the envelope, and I knew it. And I was like at one point, I had a lot of officials on my side. And all within a 2 or 3 year period, they all retired and died. A new regime came in, and somebody had a complaint, and rightly so, because I was doing a lot of new things. Architects get complaints when they're using conventional things. So, and they, when you get a complaint and you're pushing the envelope, that is bad. And it was the pushing of the envelope and the new regime of officials that clamped down and said, "Hey, Reynolds, you're breaking every rule in the book. We can fine you to the point of you never recovering." And the attorney general, assistant attorney general, told me, "Well, if you relinquish your license and you become a private citizen, we can't fine you for faults as an architect because you're a private citizen. And that's what we recommend that you do." And I said, "Well, it sounds like a pretty good idea." And I did it. And the national, the only thing I didn't plan on there was that a couple of guys on the board of New Mexico begged the national board to dump me as well, and they wouldn't do it after three tries. Finally, the fourth try, they did it on a technicality and said I could get reinstated. And when I did send them the work that we were doing in Haiti and in after the tsunami in India, they invited me to be reinstated, and I took it. And I'm reinstated everywhere except New Mexico. And actually, I'm not necessarily going to go for it in New Mexico, because it's true, as a private citizen, I can push the envelope further.
Give me a kiss to build a dream on, and my imagination will thrive upon that kiss. Sweetheart, I ask no more than this, a kiss to build a dream on. Give me a kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on. When I'm alone.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with architect Michael Reynolds. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how the basic tenets of biotecture fit in LEED certification, and maybe give our listeners a little bit of an idea of what LEED architecture is.
I have been unassociated with it. I just looked at it as another bureaucracy to make more hoops to jump through and things like that, because we have a phrase on our website that my son came up with, but I agree with it. Biotecture is beyond LEED architecture. It is just more, you know, LEED architectural as an accreditation, or however you say it, a credit for its credit for, and it's a good concept for making buildings green, but it gets too technical and it gets too caught up in itself. And if people require LEED requirements, it's just another hoop for people to jump through. Biotecture is more conceptual on, and as the attorney general, assistant attorney general in New Mexico said, the earthships are dealing with a level of thinking that the codes and regulations don't even address. We're talking about turning the sock inside out. We're talking about not only creating new ways to make power and water and contain sewage, we're talking about changing the way we live to make our needs for those different. And so we're really beyond. LEED is good for taking typical conventional architecture and trying to turn it green. We're growing off the vine green with this biotecture thing. And it's more radical. It's more conceptual. And I'm not saying, I don't want to say something against LEED. I just want to say I am thinking beyond LEED.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with architect Michael Reynolds. He's an architect who practices biotecture. Michael, so many of your pieces really are a feast for the eyes, and it's hard to try to describe this on the radio, but let's focus on some of the innovations then and how you try to blend them with visually pleasing finished products.
My feeling is that in terms of aesthetics and eye candy and pleasing to the eye, I love it. I ran a gallery when I was in college. I'm into art. I consider myself an artist. But if a boat is not going to float, there's no need to decorate it so it'll set at the bottom of the sea. So my first objective was, I don't care what these things look like. I want them to take care of people in a way that also is in harmony with the planet. I don't care what they look like. Well, it took me decades to get there, but then when I got them to where I knew they were going to float, as so to speak, then I started like going and decorating and twisting and turning and sculpting. And I've gotten to do that more recently because we're pretty sure of ourselves in terms of this building taking care of people. So now we'll make it what we consider to be beautiful and point out to people that they can take it and twist it to be what they consider is beautiful. And so it's to the point now where we can sculpt these buildings and sculpt the way we lay these bottles and sculpt the way we shape these roofs and do these things. And it does get to be pretty fun at this point.
Why don't you talk about some of the innovations that you integrate into your homes, like compost toilets, for example?
Well, we have used compost toilets, but we like compost toilets like many of our ideas. A lot of 90% of the people on the planet that in the developed world do not want to mess with a compost toilet. So for us to have these concepts reach the masses of people, we have to try to give them what they're used to in a way that is in harmony with the planet and moving in a different direction. So we started using, we went back to flush toilets because compost toilets were just not acceptable to too many people. And we went to flush toilets, but now we're fine with that because we flushed the toilets with used water, with water you took a shower in the day before. So we're recycling water. We clean that water up so you can't tell it from fresh water by the look, but it's certainly okay to flush your toilet with used water that is clear, and that doubles the use of water right there. And so we actually use the water four times. We harvest it in a cistern, and then we say, take a shower in it. That's one use. Then we water plants with it. That's the second use. And that water from the plants is still collected again in rubber liners underneath the plants to gather the water again to flush the toilet with. And then that goes out to do landscaping again in contained systems. So we get four uses out of the water. That takes our measly 7 inches of precipitation a year and turns it into 28.
And you also use some pretty unlikely materials for your building, which I can imagine was one of the things that made the certification board back in the day pull their hair out. You had mentioned that in the 70s that one of the things that inspired you was seeing the beer cans being thrown into national parks. But I also noticed that you incorporate soda and beer cans into your building materials now. This is probably just the tip of the iceberg, but why don't you walk our listeners through the thought process and how you use things like cans?
When you look around and see good materials like an aluminum can that'll pretty much last forever, a glass wine bottle that'll pretty much last forever, an automobile tire that'll pretty much last forever. When you see these things, mountains of them all over the world, you start to say, why isn't this a natural resource? Why don't we develop it to the point where this can be a natural resource? And we tried it, and it was contrived at first, but now we've been doing it for so long, I don't know of any better building materials for a multitude of reasons than automobile tires rammed with earth, cans, bottles, tires. They are fantastic building materials that are indigenous to this entire planet.
So you stack cans that are filled with earth or other materials, just like bricks almost, right?
Yes, we stack them like bricks, beat them full of earth, and that's how they become building materials. And there are several, there are details for it. The tires are also, when they're beat with earth, they become thermal mass. So it all works out to be just a fantastic building material.
Time I go from then I to this.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with architect Michael Reynolds. He's an architect who practices biotechture. So you had mentioned some of the projects that you worked on in Haiti and India. How does Earthship work, and where do you get your funding? Do you coordinate with charity organizations or NGOs like Habitat for Humanity? Or are people hiring you to build their homes strictly?
Really all of the above. We're talking to Habitat for Humanity right now, but we haven't done anything with them yet. But we have clients. We get donors, and we invest our own money and borrow money and use our own money to go to Guatemala or India or Haiti after the earthquake. We are working in every level, in the developed world and the undeveloped world, because I am starting to see the undeveloped world as a door to thinking that can help us in the developed world, because the developed world is encumbered by our belief system of what we really think we need to survive.
You also have almost a mini bed and breakfast business going on as well. If they visit Taos, New Mexico, they can rent an Earthship home for the night, right?
Yes. Yeah. We actually, that's got an interesting history, because we built our early versions of the Earthship, and they looked like they landed. They were too weird. Nobody wanted to buy one. And so I'm sitting on these weird buildings. Nobody wants to buy them, but they are interested in them. So we rented them out by the night to try and make our bank payments. And it turned out to be a great thing, because now people want to buy them, because the whole world thinking has changed and the buildings do look much more conventional anyway. But we started that as a means of saving ourselves economically. And now it has grown into a business where we build a building. We don't care if we sell it, because there's people from all over the world that want to rent it by the night, by the week. And it becomes a very good educational tool, because most people don't realize that you can sit out here in the desert and have everything from flat screen TV, high-speed internet, and a long hot shower, and be completely off of every grid.
Let's go beyond Earthship and Michael Reynolds and somebody who has the money to build their own dream home that is completely carbon neutral and off the grid. What's your vision for biotechture becoming integrated with more mass scale buildings, like modular homes, for example?
Housing has to be approaching the mass produced level, like automobiles, really, for it to be affordable. And we're trying to make it so that people can do it themselves, for sure. But we're also trying to make it so it can be mass produced. The mass producing aspect of housing is not a problem. It's the fact that it is conventional housing that uses a lot of fuel, fossil fuel, to support that is the problem. So I would like to get this thinking integrated into corporate situations, where somebody like Hyundai or Toyota or somebody that's already into mass production could see the value of this and the need for this, and mass produced housing for people to the point where you can give them an affordable dwelling unit that requires nothing out of the environment to operate. You're encountering the natural phenomenon of the environment, but you're not mining oil and coal and shipping it and transporting electricity and having infrastructure. It's a cellular approach and a decentralized approach versus a centralized approach. And I think that is entirely the way it's going to have to go.
Now I'm Napoleon at Waterloo. I think I'll cut some paper dolls for you. I'm a big tomcat chasing Mickey Mouse. It's fun to be living in the crazy house. Fun, fun, fun. Yes, it is now fun. Punch him in the eye. There's a horse on my neck. Oh no, it's a louse. It's fun to be living in the crazy house. Fun, fun, fun. Yes, fun, fun,
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with architect Michael Reynolds. Let's say you had just built me my new Earth ship and I wanted to get all of my quote-unquote utilities connected. I've already got my solar panels up and things like that, but what are the next steps to being somewhat connected to the grid? How do I have cable TV or Wi-Fi or water without making and still being off the grid?
Well, they're all their own little project. Of course, power you can get from sun and wind, and we're working every level of that. You're getting water by harvesting it off of your roof and storing it in cisterns, and then we have a whole filter and reuse system. You're containing sewage by just biology of plant roots oxygenating the water and cleaning it up and watering the plants at the same time. Then that dovetails into the food production. Then you're heating and cooling the building via thermal mass and solar technology, passive methods to maintain a constant temperature in a home. And a lot of people don't really understand the principle of thermal mass, which is very powerful. So all of those things together are their own little project, and you dovetail them all with each other, interrelate them to where the home is not just a structure, it is almost a living being like the human body that takes care of humans and interfaces with the planet.
Explain thermomass principles to us a little bit so that we understand that there are solutions out there other than just plugging your air conditioning unit into an outlet.
Thermal mass is the principle of dense mass holding temperature. One of the best examples is really if you put a cast iron skillet on a stove and a thin aluminum tin pan on a stove, you heat them both up at the same time empty, you turn the stove off, the aluminum pan has cooled off within a minute or so, and 10 minutes later, the iron skillet will still burn your finger. And that is because it's thick and dense, and that thick density holds temperature. And that is the principle right there. You are building the house out of thick density. We have walls in these houses that are 6 feet thick, and they, once they charge up with temperature, it takes a year for them to cool down, but they never get the chance. So you are stabilizing like a flywheel the temperature of your home, and that plus a little solar gain, and the solar is only half of the story, will make you have a home, if properly designed and insulated and ventilated, that will not require any fossil fuel to keep you above 60 degrees Fahrenheit.
Architect and the foremost practitioner of biotechture, Michael Reynolds, thank you so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Okay, thank you.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by the Afro-Celt Sound System, Louis Armstrong, Steel Pulse, and Red Fox.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.